Welcome to the study for January 11th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 19:30 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again. Do you think it's easy to sing? Do you think that, you know, songwriting is easy, or that writing articles is easy, or that it's easier for some people than for others? Maybe it's easier for some people than for others. Maybe it's not really easy at all for anyone. We're going to see something today that's rather telling in the Proverbs. Did you notice, though, which mummy is missing in the C cubed article, chapter 4, paragraph 8, from these pharaohs of Egypt? And apart from Akhenaten, because we think Akhenaten, we have nothing against the idea that Akhenaten be the Exodus Pharaoh. It's just that he doesn't live at the right time, and he doesn't rule in the right location. But Thutmose the First, because we can exclude Akhenaten, and all the other mummies are actually found. So Thutmose the First is the only mummy missing out of all 11 of the mummies that we mentioned, starting with Thutmose the First, of the Egyptian pharaohs. And the Bible says that Pharaoh and his men drowned. A mummy was wrongly identified as Thutmose the First. For a while, that was the case. Only later to find out, and this happened, of course, before I even started to study this topic. There was a mummy that at one time they believed was Thutmose the First, only later to find out by further research, not my research, they found out it wasn't Thutmose. Out of 11 mummies, then, Thutmose the First is the one who fits as one drowned in the Exodus with his body being lost. Based on the mummy being missing. This remarkable lack of any mummy for Thutmose can't prove anything by itself. You know, lack of proof is not proof of lack. But it is part of a larger proof which allows that Thutmose the First is Pharaoh of the Exodus. He could be, because the mummy's missing. That's the incredible fact. Yes, an allowance has been made in our chronology, especially for Thutmose the First as Pharaoh of the Exodus. And we continue comparing him with the Bible story of him. So that's all for our study in the C-cubed crucible of credible creed for today. Little children, this is the proverb I mentioned, Proverbs chapter 21, verse 25. The very craving of the lazy one will put him to death, for his hands have refused to work. Once we start feeling sorry for ourselves, that's what happens. That leads us into addictions, like, you know, well, Frank Sinatra was a functional alcoholic. He happened to be a singer, but we can only imagine what his potential might have been had he not been an alcoholic at the same time. But the very craving of the lazy will put him to death. When we start refusing to work, and there it says, for his hands have refused to work, we don't start doing something. If we choose our work and we start to work at something, like, for example, some older ladies, they take up knitting or crocheting, and they make all sorts of things, and they do all sorts of work. And that just builds self-esteem when you work at something. For me, I, when I was younger, started writing songs, and that was not easy at all. Mind you, I did do other things that would indicate that I was lazy and that I had cravings. So, I mean, this is a very true proverb, but we get our self-esteem from the work that we choose to do. Even if it's something like writing music, we can choose to do that if that's our calling. 1 Kings chapter 17, and Elijah the Tishbite from the inhabitants of Gilead proceeded to say to Ahab. Ahab was the new king of Israel in the north, the northern kingdom. As Jehovah the God of Israel, before whom I do stand, is living, there will occur during these years neither dew nor rain except at the order of my word. The word of Jehovah now came to him, saying, go away from here, and you must turn your way eastward and conceal yourself at the torrent valley of Kereth that is east of the Jordan. Okay, so Elijah had prophesied a period of drought. And it must occur, Jehovah said, that from the torrent valley you should drink, and the ravens I shall certainly command to supply you food there. Immediately he went and did according to the word of Jehovah, and so went and took up dwelling by the torrent valley of Kereth that is east of the Jordan. And the ravens themselves were bringing him bread and meat in the morning and bread and meat in the evening. Can you imagine birds like ravens carrying meat and bread to a man and delivering them to him from day to day? It seems rather hardly imaginable, doesn't it? And from the torrent valley he kept drinking. But this was the miracle that Jehovah provided. And it came about at the end of some days that the torrent valley became dry because there had occurred no downpour upon the earth. The word of Jehovah now came to him, saying, "Rise up, go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and you must dwell there. Look, I shall certainly command there a woman in Zarephath, a widow, to supply you food." Accordingly, he rose up and went to Zarephath and came into the entrance of the city. And look, a woman, a widow, was there gathering up pieces of wood. So he called to her and said, "Please get me a sip of water in a vessel that I may drink." When she began to go and get it, he went on to call her and say, "Please get me a bit of bread in your hand." At this, she said, "As Jehovah your God is living, I have no round cake." You notice the "as Jehovah your God is living." She believed in God as a living God, but she had no round cake. "But a handful of flour in the large jar and a little oil in the small jar. And here I am gathering up a few pieces of wood, and I must go in and make something for myself and my son, and we shall have to eat it and die." So she was on the verge of starvation herself. Then Elijah said to her, "Do not be afraid. Go in, do according to your word, only from what is there. Make me a small round cake first, and you must bring it out to me. And for yourself and your son, you can make something afterward. For this is what Jehovah, the God of Israel, has said. The large jar of flour itself will not get exhausted, and the small jar of oil itself will not fail. This is what Jehovah has said. The large jar of oil itself will not get exhausted, and the small jar of oil itself will not fail until the day of Jehovah's giving a downpour upon the surface of the ground." So she went and did according to Elijah's word, and she continued to eat, she together with him and her household, for days. The large jar of flour itself did not get exhausted, and the small jar of oil itself did not fail, according to Jehovah's word that he had spoken by means of Elijah. And it came about after these things that the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, fell sick. The son of the woman, the mistress of the house, fell sick, and his sickness came to be so severe that there was no breath left in him. At this, she said to Elijah, "What do I have to do with you, O man of the true God? You have come to me to bring my error to mind and to put my son to death." But he said to her, "Give me your son." Then he took him from her bosom and carried him up to the roof chamber where he was dwelling, and laid him upon his own couch. And he began calling to Jehovah and saying, "O Jehovah my God, is it also upon the widow with whom I am residing as an alien that you must bring injury by putting her son to death?" And he proceeded to stretch himself upon the child three times, and to call to Jehovah and say, "O Jehovah my God, please cause the soul of this child to come back within him." Finally, Jehovah listened to Elijah's voice so that the soul of the child came back within him and he came to life. Elijah now took the child and brought him down from the roof chamber into the house and gave him to his mother. And Elijah then said, "See, your son is alive." Upon that, the woman said to Elijah, Now, indeed, I do know that you are a man of God, and that Jehovah's word in your mouth is true. 3. Elijah stretched himself upon the child 3 times, called to Jehovah, and said, cause the soul of this child to come back within him. And that was what occurred. Jehovah listened to Elijah's voice when he said, oh Jehovah, my God, please. Ezekiel chapter 19. And as for you, raise a dirge concerning Ezekiel. And as for you, verse 1, raise a dirge concerning the chieftains of Israel, and you must say, what was your mother? You would think you would say, who was your mother? What was your mother? It says, a lioness, it says, among lions. She lay down in among maned young lions. Yeah, this is an allegory. I mean, Clark talks about this. He says the first lion is Jehoahaz. The second lion is Jehoiakim. And gradually she brought up one of her cubs, the first lion. A maned young lion is what he became, and he began to learn how to tear apart prey. He devoured even earthling man, and nations kept hearing about him. In their pit he was caught, and they proceeded to bring him by means of hooks to the land of Egypt. Jehoahaz was captured by the Egyptians, and they put Jehoiakim in place of him. When she got to see that she had waited and her hope had perished, this would be the mother lion, then she took another of her cubs as a maned young lion. She put him forth. This would be another son of Josiah, Jehoiakim, and he began to walk about in the midst of lions. So the lions are symbolizing the royal family of Israel. And he began to walk about in the midst of lions. A maned young lion is what he became, and he gradually learned how to tear apart prey. He devoured even earthling man, and he got to know his dwelling towers, and he devastated even their cities, so that the land was laid desolate, and he filled it with the sound of his roaring. And nations all around from the jurisdictional districts began to set against him and got to spread over him their net. In their pit he was caught. Finally they put him in the cage by means of hooks and brought him to the king of Babylon. They got to bring him by means of hunting nets in order that his voice might no more be heard on the mountains of Israel. Of course, Zedekiah was also brought to Babylon. Your mother was like a vine in your blood, planted by waters. Verse 10. A bearer of fruit and full of branches she became because of abundant water. Here, Clark notes, this is talking about the mother of these lions, but their mother was, of course, Israel. He's talking about Israel and comparing Israel to a vine planted by waters. A bearer of fruit and full of branches she became because of abundant water, and they came to be for her strong rods, meant for the scepters of rulers. The branches, it sounds like, are the rods, and its height gradually became tall up among branches, and it got to be visible because of its tallness, because of the abundance of its foliage. But she was finally uprooted in fury. To the earth she was thrown, and there was an east wind that dried up her fruit. Her strong rod was torn off and became dry. Fire itself devoured it. And now she is planted in the wilderness, in a waterless and thirsty land. I've been gathering up wood today and working on the fire, getting prepared for this big snowfall that they say is coming. So I'm not in the mindset of reading, of how to read. I'm not thinking about reading. I'm a lay preacher, I guess. And now she is planted in the wilderness, in a waterless and thirsty land, and fire proceeded to come forth from her rod. Her strong rod was torn off and became dry. Fire itself devoured it. No, I have a funny thought about, I can't read fire itself devoured it. I want to say fower instead of fire. Fire itself devoured it. Her strong rod. And fire proceeded to come forth from her rod. In verse 14, it devoured her very shoots, her very fruit. And there proved to be in her no strong rod, no scepter for ruling. That's the sad news, because it says at the end of chapter 19 of Ezekiel, that is a dirge, and it will become a dirge. Dirge being a funeral song, because it's a sad story about the loss of Israel's sovereignty, of course. She didn't have a king, a scepter, for a ruler. She did no longer have a king. She didn't, after Egypt conquered Israel by defeating and killing Josiah, she didn't have a king for the long, long time, which would be the, at least, maybe even include, it may not be the whole period of the Gentiles, but it might, the period of the Gentiles, the Gentile times, began sometime after this destruction of the sovereignty of Israel, where she lost her king. Her kings were captured and taken away, and she didn't have a king anymore. When the Gentile times actually began, I've been just considering recently that perhaps we could consider them as having begun instead of in 608, in 538. It's just a new idea I've had to think about, that Jehovah's revealed it to me somehow. He just reveals things to us when we're seeking for the truth. And today we have some time. We're going to be able to do, I think, Jehovah willing, we'll do Revelation 10 and 11. And I saw another strong angel descending from heaven, arrayed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head, and his face was as the sun, and his feet were as fiery pillars. And he had in his hand a little scroll opened, and he set his right foot upon the sea, but his left one upon the earth. And he cried out with a loud voice, just as when a lion roars. And when he cried out, the seven thunders uttered their own voices. Now when the seven thunders spoke, I was at the point of writing, and I heard a voice out of heaven say, seal up the things the seven thunders spoke, and do not write them down. And the angel that I saw standing on the sea and on the earth raised his right hand to heaven, and by the one who lives forever and ever, who created the heaven and the things in it, and the earth and the things in it, and the sea and the things in it, he swore, there will be no delay any longer, but in the days of the sounding of the seventh angel, when he is about to blow his trumpet, the sacred secret of God, according to the good news which he declared to his own slaves, the prophets, is indeed brought to a finish. And the voice that I heard out of heaven is speaking again with me and saying, go, take the open scroll that is in the hand of the angel who is standing on the sea and on the earth. And I went away to the angel and told him to give me the little scroll. And he said to me, take it and eat it up, and it will make your belly bitter, but in your mouth it will be sweet as honey. And I took the little scroll out of the hand of the angel and ate it up, and in my mouth it was sweet as honey. But when I had eaten it up, my belly was made bitter. And they said to me, you must prophesy again with regard to peoples and nations and tongues and many kings. Now, Revelation 11. And a reed like a rod was given me, as he said, get up and measure the temple sanctuary of God. John writes this book of Revelation. So John is being told this. And to measure the altar and those worshipping in it. But as for the courtyard that is outside the temple sanctuary, cast it clear out and do not measure it, because it has been given to the nations, and they will trample the holy city underfoot for 42 months. Now, since John wrote this after 70 CE, we believe he wrote this book in sometime around 96 CE, after 70 CE, when Jerusalem was destroyed. So this trampling of the holy city is not talking about the literal Jerusalem of that time, because it had already been destroyed. It's talking about the future holy city, whatever that would mean in a metaphorical sense or spiritual sense. And they will trample the holy city, it said, underfoot for 42 months, 3.5 years. And I will cause my two witnesses, to prophesy 1,260 days. Well, 3 years is 960 days if there's 360 days each. So it's 1,200. And then 180 onto that is 1,260, right? Is it or not? No, it's not. Actually, it's not. It doesn't work out. Hang on a second. It didn't work out. 3 times 360 is... No, it's not 960. No, it wasn't 960. It was 1080. So that is right then. 1080 plus 360 again. Or sorry, plus 180. 180, which is half a year. If the year is 360. In the symbolic language of scripture or prophecy, a year is 360 days because 12 months of 30 days equals 360. Each lunar month being approximately 30 days, so it's just a representation of a year as 360 days. It's not accurate. It's not intended to be accurate, but 1260 days is what we get when we take 3 times 360 plus 180. So it says in verse 3, and I will cause my two witnesses to prophesy 1,260 days. When you multiply that by 2, you get, 3.5 times 2 is 7. 7 times, which is 2 times 1,260, is 2,520. And that's the times of the Gentiles, the 7 times. In terms of years, 2,520 years. So that's where it comes from, right here in Revelation. These are symbolized by the two olive trees, these witnesses, and the two lampstands. They're called witnesses in verse 3. And they're standing before the Lord of the earth. And if anyone wants to harm them, fire issues forth, verse 5, from their mouths and devours their enemies. And if anyone should want to harm them in this manner, he must be killed. These have the authority to shut up heaven that no rain should fall during the days of their prophesying. That's remarkable because in 1 Kings today we read about Elijah pronouncing the prophecy about the drought that Jehovah had inspired him to utter, that no rain should fall during the days of their prophesying, it says. And how long will they prophesy? 1,260 days. 3.5 years, basically. These have the authority to shut up heaven, verse 6, that no rain should fall during the days of their prophesying. And they have authority over the waters to turn them into blood and to strike the earth with every sort of plague as often as they wish. It's amazing imagine having that kind of power. And when they have finished their witnessing, the wild beast that ascends out of the abyss, this is the first time we've heard of this, isn't it? The wild beast that ascends out of the abyss. We haven't heard of any wild beast up till now. This wild beast will make war with them and conquer them and kill them, and their corpses will be on the broad way of the great city, which is in a spiritual sense called Sodom and Egypt, but it's Jerusalem, we know. Spiritual Jerusalem. It's they're preaching because it says where their Lord was also impaled. So they're preaching in Jerusalem in the holy city. They're preaching in this place where the Lord was also impaled, and that's where their corpses are going to be, in the great city, which we know is Jerusalem, but it's like Sodom and Egypt in the sense that it's very lacking in spirituality that Israel was disobedient and lacked in spirituality, even also in the times of Jeremiah, Ezekiel, that all the prophets prophesied against Israel whenever they did wrong. And those of the peoples and tribes and tongues and nations Those of the peoples and tribes and tongues and nations will look at their corpses for 3.5 days, and they do not let their corpses be laid in a tomb. That's similar to the 3.5 days of Jonah, and with also similar to the time that Jesus spent in the tomb, 3.5 days. And those dwelling on the earth rejoice over them. It's actually identical. 3.5 days is identical with the time spent, with the time prophesied and spent in the tomb by Jesus. And those dwelling on the earth rejoice over them and enjoy themselves, and they will send gifts to one another. Because these two prophets tormented those dwelling on the earth. They will send gifts to one another. That's how much they hated these prophets that were telling the truth. Tormenting people by telling the truth. They weren't bad people at all. The prophets are Jehovah's prophets. They were his prophets, Jehovah said. Right? The angel was telling, or Jesus was telling through the angel, John was being told these things by Jesus through the angel, that they were his prophets, his witnesses, in verse 3. They were Jesus' witnesses. Just like Jesus was crucified, these witnesses were also killed in verse 7 by the wild beast that ascends out of the abyss. But it says it was because these two prophets tormented those dwelling on the earth. And verse 11, and after the 3.5 days, spirit of life from God entered into them, just like Jesus was raised up after 3.5 days, and they stood up on their feet, and great fear fell upon those beholding them. And they heard a loud voice out of heaven say to them, come on up here. And they went up into heaven in the cloud, and their enemies beheld them. And in that hour a great earthquake occurred, and a tenth of the city fell, and 7,000 persons were killed by the earthquake, and the rest became frightened and gave glory to the God of heaven. The second woe is past. Look, the third woe is coming quickly. And the seventh angel blew his trumpet, and loud voices occurred in heaven, saying, the kingdom of the world did become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, and he will rule as king forever and ever. And 24 elders who were seated before God upon their thrones fell upon their faces and worshiped God, saying, we thank you, Jehovah God the Almighty, the one who is and who was, because you have taken your great power and begun ruling as king. But the nations became wrathful, and your own wrath came at the appointed time for the dead to be judged, and to give their reward to your slaves, the prophets, and to the holy ones, and to those fearing your name, the small and the great, and to bring to ruin those ruining the earth. There's a lot contained in that section of verse 16 through 18. And verse 15 as well. And the temple sanctuary of God that is in heaven was opened, and the ark of his covenant was seen in his temple sanctuary. And there occurred lightnings and voices and thunders, and an earthquake and a great hail. For some reason, I'm reminded now. That's the end of Revelation 11. And that concludes our Bible reading today. I'm reminded, though, of what Ron Wyatt said. He was an anesthesiologist who was a lay preacher, and he was the one who worked on a lot of things archaeologically. As an amateur archaeologist, he worked on a lot of different things in different areas around the ancient biblical sites. He even went to Sodom, I remember. That's another thing he did. And he found some of the sulfur that was there. And he discovered chariot wheels in the Red Sea. They were not at the location where we thought that the crossing occurred, though. But that was remarkable. That seemed to have proven that there was a crossing, but in a different location from where we thought it occurred. But also he did amazing things. He did remarkable discoveries. He unearthed Noah's Ark, and he did a lot of work on Noah's Ark. He did a lot of work with other experts who were professional experts. He was an amateur. But he also went and dug in the area of the crucifixion site. And one of the things he said was that he found the Ark of the Covenant underground. He found the Ark of the Covenant, where it had been hidden underground in Jerusalem during one of the many, you know, periods of warfare when Israel was, you know, under attack and potentially going to be losing the Ark to the enemy if they didn't hide it. But he had professed that he'd seen the Ark. He had pictures of it as well, but he wasn't going to publish any of it. And part of the reason was because it says here there was going to be the Ark of the Covenant was going to be seen at the appropriate time, but here in the book of Revelation, it mentions the Ark of the Covenant was seen in verse 19 here in heaven. But Ron didn't believe that the Ark of the Covenant on earth was going to be seen until the right time would arrive for that to occur. He was a very faithful man, and you know, because of a lot of the things that he said and did, and the lack of documentation, it's very easy to just dismiss Ron Wyatt completely. Although he can't dismiss the Ark site because it's now the national park in Turkey called Noah's Ark National Park. And you can't dismiss, you know, a lot of the things he did, you know, are not easily dismissed. But the thing is, he's still regarded as some kind of a charlatan, and by many people, he's just disregarded and discredited. But when you listen to what he said, he found the blood of Christ, that's right, on the mercy seat, where he found the Ark of the Covenant, and he had the blood tested, and it was living blood, and all these things that he did were just incredible, unbelievable things that he did. He puts to shame most of us who want to be believers by the things that he did, but he was so faithful. He used all of his money that he earned as an anesthesiologist, apparently, although we don't know exactly what his source of funds may have been, but that's what he said. I think that's what we understand he did. He used all of his funds that he could, besides the funds he used to support his family, to do this archaeological research. And so that's all for our study for today. Within about 20 seconds it will be anyway. But wasn't that an uplifting study? I mean, it really helps us to understand what's going on with prophecy and witnesses and people who are persecuted and killed because they're like Christ. They teach the truth, and it's January 11th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 20:03 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. I love you, I love you, I love you. It's been great to see you. I hope you've enjoyed this study today. On my behalf, this is Gully, and this is Cassie, saying for today, bye for now.